Choose your next words carefully, Leonidas. They may be your last.
Madman. You're a madman. Blasphemy. This is madness!
This is Sparta!
Who do we have left? Britney Spears. Kim Kardashian. Paris Hilton. Yeah, that's what we have to look forward to, Kanye West. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. We're global.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this show. That's right. I am number one. Good morning. And Ellen's number one, too. We conquer the morning.
Yes, we do.
We may have some news that we may be conquering the evening. We'll talk about that later.
What? Okay. That's news to me.
That is news to me. Good morning. Good afternoon.
As your executive producer, don't you think I should be in on this little tidbit of info?
Yeah, I just informed you. Officially.
Before now?
Unofficially, you can. Unofficially, you could yell at me.
Okay. Unofficially.
I know. Thank you, Ellen. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. We are global. We're heard around the world. We are, like Ellen said, we are number one. We conquered the airwaves in the morning. And soon we'll be conquering the airwaves in the evening. There's an adversary. He's my nemesis. He's the only one. His name is Easy. I think Ellen was with me when Easy was around.
Yes, I was.
Easy.
Do things easy
torment.
Way.
Everything's easy. I mean, if you talk to Easy, that's all he says. What up, Easy? Hey, I'm smooth and I'm easy. Everything's easy. Anyway, he torments me. I torment him. He likes to say the easy way. We like to say the right way. He likes to say, all you have to do is relax and we'll take care of it. It's easy. What we like to say is, we don't want you to relax. You work your ass off. We'll hammer it out and you'll nail it. So you can see the conflict what we have. Easy develop a network. I admire the guy. I like the guy. I like his work ethics. I love the guy. He never sleeps. He's everything I like, except he's going against me. I admire him. I went on, I don't know if he's been on our show. I think he's been on our show. Ellen, I don't know if you're with me when I went on his show. And
yes, I was.
He says, oh, my God. So I go into, so he invites me on his show. Hammer, I'm going to show you how it's done. Right. And he has a bunch of his five people on the show, right? I go on his show, and his little minions try to take the hammer down. Ain't going to happen, Easy. Bottom line, at the end of the show, Easy says, oh, my God, Hammer. I said, hey, I like you, but I'm going to crush your little bones. And then I'm going to put them in my little hand, and you're going to go to the dust. But I like you. I really like the guy. He expanded his network. We expanded ours. He says, I'm Hollywood, Hammer. I go, I've been in Hollywood. I don't like fake. I'm real. And the transition is that, you know, I have been on the air for about 10 years. I have interviewed probably over 3,000 authors, maybe, Ellen, in that period of time, maybe more. I don't know.
Yeah.
At one point, we interviewed. At one point, we were interviewing offers every day for a year. But one thing,
yep.
When you look at reality TV shows, and we did this show last week, and you really look at your favorite reality TV show, it's not real. It's a setup, all of them. When you listen to this show, when you hear these stories, it's real. And we got one today. It's real. Nobody's setting up the thing. No, Michelle is not in our green room and getting the pedicure and getting cheese and crackers and champagne. Nobody's giving Michelle a script. Nobody's telling Michelle to hit a mark, smile for the camera. Nobody's doing that to Michelle. No. Usually we would send Michelle a car. We don't have Uber. We call it Fuber. We put the F-U in the ride. That's how tough we are. Fuber. Michelle comes in the studio, and she comes in strong. This is a difficult interview for me. It's going to probably deal with a lot of things that I can relate to. And it's going to probably be a difficult interview for a lot of people to hear. But you know what? Life is real. Life is not reality TV show, unless you're the president of the United States and you're a Republican. Forget that. But life is real. The stories are real. The people are real. We made a promise to you authors and to other independent artists that we're going to move you forward. We did that promise 5 years ago, and we have. And we're going to continue. And I have a big surprise for you authors who join us. I'm from the background of Hollywood. You know that. if you listen to the show. I said, what can I bring to the party besides good looks, personality, and a wonderful guy I am? I don't know. Well, I know what I could do. I can mix what I do with Hollywood. So I, you know, people are yelling at Facebook and this and this and this. And I said, don't yell at things. Look at it. How can you use it? How can it benefit you? Here's what we're going to start be doing probably next month. We're going to start having watch parties. I'm putting it together now. For instance, let's say you're a new author and you're promoting a book. Well, we're going to have a premiere. We'll call it the red carpet premiere. And you're going to be able to invite your friends to watch it. If you're on Facebook, it's going to be a watch party. It's going to be really good. I'll tell you later on how we're going to be setting this up. And again, this is one of our promises to move artists forward. Not to mention the commercials we're doing for the authors. And you're going to see a lot more commercials about the Capture Store with MVP. You're going to be starting seeing that hitting on social media. And there's one thing you guys did not know and Ellen did not tell you. Secretly, Ellen's been training. Secretly. Nobody knew this. Right, Ellen?
Ellen? Yes, I have.
And what have you been training for, Ellen?
I've been training to do the show on my own every once in a while.
That's right. Ellen's been training to do the show. And she's good. She's really good. And you'll be starting seeing Ellen. Pretty soon Ellen's going to have a show called Ellen and Friends, who plays this one. Trust me, she's that good.
Yeah.
And you'll start
seeing a hammer.
Well, we're going to expand our network, and I'm counting on you. We had that talk, and Ellen's going to take the reins sometimes in the future. But until then, I want to talk to you about DIY. The thing is DIY. Do it yourself. You know, and I'm talking to Michelle, and I'm not taking up much of her time. I swear she's going to get her full time, but I just got to get this information out. DIY, a lot of people are doing it. Amazon has a DIY, meaning that you can do it yourself, your book, put it together, blah, blah, blah. That's what I'm talking about. Well, that's cool. I'm glad they have the platform. But you got to have the knowledge. After you complete your book, you got to have the knowledge. And I'll give you an example of DIY. Quick. There's no thing, if you listen to the show, I was an amateur boxer. I was a cocky little bastard, and I still am, but not so much little. It was a third fight. The guy goes to me, it's a trainer. He wasn't my trainer, just one of the trainers for the thing. He goes, watch for the guy. He has a hard right. Watch for the hard right. Don't get hit by the hard right. I go, go get hit by the hard right. Don't get hit by the hard right. Go, you know, remember that. I remember that. I go in a ring, I see him throw a right, and I watched it. And the guy hit me with the left and knocked me down. I said, and the guy goes, what are you doing? I said, I was watching for the right. He goes, yeah, but he has two hands. Oh, lesson learned. And the reason I said that is when you go DIY, you're doing it yourself. That's cool. But you got to have the knowledge to do it. And a lot of mistakes that people do on Amazon, we've talked about the IBSN number, that you're going on Amazon IBSN number. But that will not put you into the bestseller list. Barnes & Noble and other places will not take you because you're on Amazon ISBN number. A lot of authors don't know that. A lot of authors says, okay, I completed a book. Yeah, you and 1 million other people. What are you going to do? I'll give you 2 weeks to promote your book until your friends start saying, let's change your names and hide from her. It happens. Know your audience. Get your press kit. Get yourself professional. Once you do a book, that's fine. Great. You got a product. Now it's time to sell it. It's time to promote it. It's time to brand it. It's time to market it. That's where the work comes in. We're doing the best we can to move artists forward. Now we're starting doing the commercials for artists. We're getting them press kits for artists. We're doing sponsorship for artists. And now we're going to do the watch thing on Facebook. We're going to call it the red carpet premiere when they have a book and it's a premiere. And everybody go, yeah, we want you to bring your friends. Yeah, we're going to have a great thing. It's going to be fun. It's going to be real fun. We're coming after you easy. You're going to do it the easy way. We're going to do it the right way. We're expanding our network. I got Ellen. Ellen's going to network you on her show. It's going to knock your show to blitherings. our authors and our talent is going to supersede your talent. Next time, and then I will invite you on my show so you can learn. You want to do it the easy way? You want to slide in? Cool. We're going to do it the right way. We're going to hammer it out, and we're going to nail it. He's my nemesis. Love the guy. I'm going to crush his bones. It's all fun, Ellen. All right, everybody. Michelle is here, and I want to say hello to
Michelle comes on. Yes, our sponsor and our celebrity chef is here too.
I'm going to say I think she's here to support Michelle, our celebrity chef Charisse Kateri Cox. Good morning. Your segment is next, and you came here to support us and Michelle Mays, didn't you?
I sure did. I want to hear this story. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Oh, you want to hear my story? Well, I was raised
not
as a black
story.
Child. Oh, not mine.
Not your
okay,
story.
Figured.
I know your story.
You know, we know your story, Brian.
Yeah, I didn't
exactly.
Get at me. All right, fine. Ladies and gentlemen, where's Michelle from, Ellen? Do you know where Michelle's from?
No, I don't.
Let me see. 937. Why do I think it's back east? Like, is it New York or Connecticut? I don't know. We'll talk. We'll ask her. I think she's from back east. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk to Michelle Marie Mays. The title of her project is called Dumpster Doll, The Early Years. Ellen said what's going on. I'll just say this a little bit. If you don't have a heart, I don't know. I have nothing. If you don't have a heart, by hearing this story, you'll probably get one. You're like the Grinch. It'll probably grow three times as big by the time you hear this story. I'm not going to build me up. All I have to do is the easy stuff. I kick back and ask her questions. Michelle's going to carry the show. Pressure's on her, not me. Just remember that. Thank you. Boy, Ellen, dead audience.
We're listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the dumpster to the palace, a survivor, a warrior, an author, I'd like to introduce you to our guest today. Michelle Mays. Look at the people out there. My God, they love her. You can hear them yelling. Michelle, 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 Marie, Mays, Mays, Mays. Yay. Look at the people. Good morning, Michelle. How are you? Welcome to the show. Michelle? Oh, wait a minute. Ellen forgot to unmute you. Sorry. That would have been one short interview. Good morning, Michelle. Good morning, Michelle. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you so much. That was a wonderful introduction.
Well, it's true. It is so true. Here we are, Michelle Mays. I'm glad you made it
Michelle
to the
Marie
studio. We would have sent you. Oh, I'm sorry, Michelle. Ooh, all right.
Yes.
Ellen,
my initials are
security.
MMM. So I'm so good.
Uh-oh. Security, Ellen. Security. All right.
That's my DJ. That's my DJ call sign, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I love it. Yeah. Michelle, tell me about your foundation. I hear good things about that. We'll start there.
Well, the foundation that I am starting with another vice president here in a Columbus company. I'm in Columbus, Ohio, by the way. I heard you ask where I was from. I'm in the Columbus,
mm-hmm.
Ohio area, a small town called Marysville, Ohio. But a vice president of a Columbus company, she approached me right after I released the book And she said, you know, I've been wanting to do a project or something when I retire in 3 years. And I've been really stressed and worrying about what I'm going to do when I retire. And she said, I've been, you know, throwing a bunch of different ideas around in my head. She said, I have never been more clear as to what I'm supposed to do now than to help you start this foundation. And we're not going to wait until your book does better. We're going to start it now. So wow. We've been collecting information. This is a teaser for book two. I did age out of the foster care system. And when I aged out of the foster care system, I was homeless. And, you know, there are a lot of things that foster children, when they age out of the system, they don't have. They don't have parental support. They don't have family. And they don't have those life skills that your family teaches you as you're growing. I know because I dealt with it. You know, things, simple things like how to get car insurance, a driver's license, open a bank account, you know, do laundry, find an apartment, apply for an apartment, apply for grants. You know, there are so many things out there that we learn from our parents. And, you know, we just know as we become adults and go into society that a lot of foster children don't know. And over 20,000 foster children age out of the system every year. A lot of them become homeless. A lot of them become drug addicted. A lot of them become suicidal or commit suicide. From the point I started writing this book until I finished it, three children that I knew the people who knew the people, three children aged out of the foster care system and killed themselves in that span of me starting the book and finishing. As soon as I heard the first one, I looked at my co-author, Michelle Moon. I said, we have got to get this book finished quick. They need to read this book. So the foundation, I don't have the official name for it yet, but it is in the works, and I hope to announce it very soon. But we will provide a decade of support for foster children that have aged out of the system in every aspect of what they need help with for a decade. And the reason why we're doing a decade is because I didn't get my shit together until I was like 27, 28 years old.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't get the last part of it. You're 28 years old?
I said I didn't get my shit together until I was 27 or 28. So I figure, you know, that's a good time to offer support for aging foster youth.
Well, Michelle, I wish you the best. We're going to go to the beginning. It's going to be a hard interview. Would you like to have a safe word? Sometimes I give people a safe word. A safe word is,
you know,
this.
What?
I'm going to ask hard. Yeah.
If you've read my book, you know I can handle quite a bit. So bring it on.
Okay. All right. Ellen, look at her. Tough chick. I like it. All right, Michelle. Michelle, let's go to the beginning, okay? I want to be your eyes. I want to see what you see. I want our audience to see what you see. I want our audience to feel what you felt. I want to feel hopeless. I want to feel freedom, what the taste of it is when you got it. I want to be in that foster care system. I need to see it. So we're going to go into the beginning. You mentioned that your parents, if I had to ask you to describe your mother, and if they're drug addicted, they must have been through stages, meaning she must have been nice at one time and she turned this and progressed to this. So if I had to ask you to describe your mother, what would you say, Michelle?
Oh, goodness. That's a good question, Brian.
Thank you.
I would have to say there are moments where she was clean and she was a decent woman, but those were so few that I have very little memory of the good parts. From what I remember, if she wasn't drunk, she she was high. If she wasn't high, she was on heroin. She was strung out. Or if she was jonesing for a fix, she was violent. So I would say my mother, I don't know if she is or not. I pretend she's dead because she had no, she brought me into this world. You know, thank God for that. But she had nothing good to offer any one of us. And there was just, there was just so much evil. She not only did to myself, but my brothers, and her own siblings and sisters. I don't know if she's listening to this, if she's alive, you know, I hope she knows that she didn't break us.
You mentioned, you know, some people believe that some people are not born evil. There are some people believe that, yeah, some people are born evil. If you had to put your mother in that category, you would put her in, we're talking born, they can turn evil, but do you believe that your mother was born evil?
No, I don't believe she was born evil. I believe she was a product of her mother as well. Her mother did very similar things that she did to us, but that doesn't mean anything. You know, you don't have to repeat the cycle. As a matter of fact, it should be opposite. If you didn't like something that was done to you when you were young, don't do it to someone else. Don't do it to your children. Break that circle. Break that cycle. And she didn't have to do that to us, even though her mother did it to her. I chose not to do it with my children, and my children grew up to be very, you know, mentally stable, healthy, young, you know, contributors of society. My one son is special operations in the Navy, and I have another one who is a successful real estate agent, and another one who is a successful corporate financier, I guess is what you would call it. But
yes.
I mean, it was because I made the choice not to repeat the stuff that was done to me. She should have made that choice as well. And she didn't. She wasn't born evil. But when she was old enough to make her own decision, she could have chosen not to repeat the same atrocities that happened to her.
Now, what age? What age were you when the abuse started? How did it start? That night, what happened?
Well, the first one I can remember was when I was, I think I was around 4 years old. And it's, the chapter is Taboo. I think it's the first chapter in the book. And my mother left us with her teenage brother so that they could go party because she went out a lot. My dad was in the military and he was away in Japan for a year. And that her brother just kind of did things to me that young men should not be doing with four-year-old children. And
so he molested you.
I don't gloss over it in the book. Yes, he molested
Right. I understand. And for those, again, I want to see what you see. I want to feel what you feel. It's not easy. The reason I can ask you those questions, you just said it, that it's in the book. I understand.
Yes.
And a lot of people who have not gotten the book yet, they need to hear and feel this book. So when they read this book, they can remember the anger, the pain, the abandonment, all you felt. And by the way, it helps sell books too. So you still don't want the safe word yet? Okay.
I will
4 years. Okay. 4 years old.
4 years old.
And I noticed that when you refer to your grandfather, I mean, when you refer to your cousins or things, you said her brother. I refer to your uncles and everything. So you seem to not associate anything with that part of the side of the family as your cousin or your uncle or anything else. I noticed how you talk. You're four. And how many, you have siblings, so you mentioned your siblings. Are you the youngest or are you the oldest or where do you fit in?
I am the second. I have an older brother and then I have two younger brothers and a younger sister.
Ooh, because usually the older one will take the brunt of it. It's weird that the second one. Yeah. Okay. 4 years old. Your uncle, your brother. You're alone. By the way, I saw your picture. You're very pretty. Very pretty lady. You're a very pretty lady.
Thank you.
Yeah, you are. You really are. You're the kind of lady that would take out knowing your thing. You know where our first date would be? Right to a counselor. Here you go. She's pretty on the outside. Fix her. And I'll pick you up at 5. But
that it'd take much longer than that.
Yeah, really.
That'd be one expensive first date.
And you know what? You'll be worth it because I think this book needs to open up people's eyes. This goes on. We don't want to hear it. We don't want to see it. We'll see it in the newspapers. But this goes on. And I thank you. Like I said, our stories are real. Michelle, four.
And they put it in the newspapers or they'll play a scene and suggest molestation happened in a show or a movie, but nobody ever gets to the nitty-gritty of what really happens. And I think that's why it continues to happen in families because they don't really, unless you've experienced it, you don't really know what molestation means. But let me just tell you, and here I am, I'm going to lay it out for you, and it's in the book.
All right.
He walks in. I'm using the bathroom. He walks in, and he pulls his penis out and shoves it right in my face at 4 years old. Imagine a four-year-old child having a 17-year-old man do that. Who does that? That's sick. It's disgusting. And then when I protested, he was like, no, okay, go ahead, put your hands on it. Now picture a little four-year-old child's hands around a grown man's penis. Picture that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's disgusting. And nobody really brings this out the way it needs to be brought out.
Right.
In my opinion, if you are a molester of children, if you molest children, you deserve to have it all cut off. That should be your punishment. And that's the way I feel about that.
No.
Because they should never.
Right.
Everybody says, oh, it's a sickness. He's getting help. No. No. I don't care if it's a sickness. You know what? If you don't know how to control that thing, you should lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
That's the way I feel about it. I'm sorry. I'm very passionate about children.
I'm glad you are.
This subject, and there is no reason in the world for anyone to take advantage of a child like that.
Michelle, you hit it on the head. We can watch SUV or whatever you want to, and they kind of go over it, and then there's Superman that saves the day. You know, the child usually breaks down. We get the kid, happy ending. But it's very ugly. It's very scary. And Superman doesn't come sometimes. You're there.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. It is, people need to know how terrifying, and so you're four. Now, oh my God, I hope I can really go, you know, people are listening. And Michelle, how often does this go on? You're only four at this time. How often does this go on?
Right.
To what age does this stop? I mean, you went to a foster place, but we're still with your parents. We're still here. So you're four. Tell me what a four-year-old's life is after that. I want to see it.
After that, I was afraid to use the restroom when other men were in the home. or in, we lived in a trailer in a trailer park. So I wet my pants, you know, if I held it too
right.
long, because I was waiting for them to leave so that I could go to the bathroom. And then we had a paper route, and my mom made me ride with him on this paper route, even though I tried to tell her, and I threw a temper tantrum, and I, you know, stomped my feet and threw my body on the floor and screamed and kicked, and she picked me up and busted my butt and said, no, you're
mm-hmm.
going with him. You're going with your Uncle Tommy. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, can we cut that part? I'm not supposed to say names.
We won't mention his name. I could,
okay,
if you want the edited thing, a lot of this will be edited, I understand. And we don't know his last name.
I had to change,
so, I mean, you're married.
To change names in the book. Okay, so.
Good.
Anyway.
Okay.
So we're on this paper route where we put these, roll up these papers and put them in these plastic bins that are screwed under every mailbox. And he's making me pull my pants down in the car and fondling me and making me fondle him. And then this, you know, at one point, this guy starts to walk up to the car. He had to ask him a question or something. And, you know, he all of a sudden throws all these papers all over my lap. So I'm sitting here, and this guy has his head in the window. I'm about to have a heart attack. As a four-year-old child, you know, I'm sitting there. I'm shaking. I'm frozen with fear. I don't know what to do. I'm just completely silent, and I don't know what to say. And my mom isn't going to help me. My father is halfway across the country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. You're doing great. You're a warrior, Michelle. You're strong.
Yes. I kept thinking in my head was, I can't wait for my dad to get home. He's going to kill this guy. I cannot wait for my dad
right.
to get home. He's going to kill him. And
mm-hmm.
so I was just trying to get through it until he got home. I even tried to run away from home. And I think I made it half a mile down the street. People, you know, some people were like, oh, come here, you want some Kool-Aid? And I was like, oh, yeah, cool, thank you. And next thing I know, I'm sitting here drinking Kool-Aid, and the cops show up and take me back. And, oh, I got my butt busted for that. But, I mean, that, you know, just simple things like that. A child having Kool-Aid on a nice hot summer day with their family, that's the stuff children should be dealing with. They shouldn't be dealing with, you know, do I have to sit with my uncle? Do I have to ride with my uncle? Oh, my gosh, my mom's going out. Is he going to be here? You know, kids shouldn't have to think about that. And,
I agree.
And even if it's not your uncle, family, friend, whatever, the kids should not have that kind of mentality yet.
I
or
agree.
Worry.
Did he penetrate you, Michelle? Michelle, did he rape you?
No.
He
no.
did not rape you?
No.
Okay.
No.
Now, did you tell anyone at that time? You're waiting for your father to get home. Did you tell your father what was going on with Uncle So-and-so?
So here's the thing. By the time my father got home, him and my mom were having it really rocky.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point to where my dad was wanting a divorce from my mother, because when he got home, she had moved another man in the house. And he was going to take us kids and leave mother. There was so much drama going on at the time. And I was just so happy to have him home. I did not.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted everything. I was like, okay, he's home. It's going to go back to normal. I don't have to deal with this anymore. You know, let's just let it go. And then we moved to North Carolina and lived on the military base there in Camp Lejeune. And my mom agreed to clean up and get sober, and she came with us. So there was a short time where she was sober, and it was great. You know, it seemed like we were going to be a normal family, and then it all started again.
Right.
My mom had this this big giant chest. I don't know if you guys ever saw those when you were kids, but it smelled like cedar, and it was a big wooden chest that, you know, you could put your family photo albums in or your blankets or whatever. And my mom had this big chest in the hallway, and she called it her hope chest. And, you know, her and my dad would fight every now and then, but not a lot back then. And one night, you know, it's Christmas Eve, and we're sitting around the tree, me and my brothers, and we're like shaking the presents, trying to figure out what we had. And all of a sudden you hear all this crash, 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 and screaming, and you mother, you know what? And I look down the hall, and my mom is punching my father in the head, and she was not a small woman. And so I'm freaking out. My brothers are freaking out. And what was in the bottom of the hope chest under all the photo albums and blankets was a bunch of liquor bottles. And my father was busting them in the bathtub and trying to get rid of them. And she was trying to stop him from doing that. And I'm like, I've got to stop this. Here I am. I think I was five at the time. Here I am thinking, what can I do to stop this? So I run down the hall, and I'm screaming at them to stop fighting, and they don't hear me because they're screaming at each other. And I just jumped right in front of my father as he went to throw the next bottle, and I just screamed as hard as I could, stop! And then, I'm sorry. Then my father picks me up. Because I didn't know it. I was standing in the glass. There was glass on the floor. I guess I had cut my foot. And I have to drink water.
Sure. No, take your
drinking
time.
Drinking water helps when you get emotional.
Sure.
So,
you know what helps
me?
I like to drink.
To the kitchen.
Yeah,
what
scotch helps me. Scotch. Oh, scotch.
Well, it's kind of early for scotch.
Oh, never too early for scotch. It's midnight somewhere.
So he takes me to the kitchen to clean my foot off, and she was gone. Out the door.
Right.
The door.
Right.
So, yeah, that was the end of my mother and father.
Well, we're going to, well, you said two, you said addicted parents. Did your father eventually become an addict himself?
Okay. In today's society, marijuana is legal.
Right. Sure.
So my father has extreme PTSD. I mean, extreme PTSD, to where the smallest thing will set him off, and he'll go into a full blown throwing furniture rant. His face will turn purple. He's spitting in your face because he's yelling at you so hard. It's kind of like a staff sergeant in the military in those boot camp movies you see. That was my father every time he got mad. So he smokes marijuana to calm himself down.
I do it too. I'm the calmest person on the planet.
And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't want anybody to think I have a problem with that. The problem is when you smoke it so much because you're trying to avoid triggers, you just you have no motivation to do anything. So if you smoke it like a pack of cigarettes, it's going to have an effect. So that was the part of my father that I'm referring to as the drug addict, because he was so addicted to the marijuana to where he had no motivation to do anything.
You're like a warrior princess, Michelle. Let's go to a part where you said you were abandoned. Were you living in a trailer park? And at times, were you just locked in the trailer? And tell me about that. Tell me the first time that happened.
We ended up back with our mother later on in the story, and she went back to her party ways.
You don't want to give too much away.
I'm not giving too much away.
Okay.
But
I have to protect you.
But when she would go out, she would padlock the outside of the door. And we were told, don't leave this trailer. Absolutely under no circumstances, you don't leave this trailer. And one time she never came home. And we had a few canned goods in the cupboards, and we would share those. And but one night, it was very, very late at night. It was dark. We were all sleeping in the same bed, and somebody started kicking the bottom part of the door. Was aluminum, and they were kicking it and kicking it and kicking it. And we all were, like, huddled up in the corner screaming. And you couldn't even hear what they were saying because we were screaming so loud, but there were lights going everywhere. And all of a sudden I start seeing my brothers being yanked from me. Mm-hmm. And I was the last one that they pulled from the bed because I was holding on so tight and kicking, trying to kick them. But they were the police, and they took us to a children's home in Plant City, Florida.
Did they separate you from your siblings?
Yeah, we were separated at first in the children's home because there was a girl's house, there was a boy's house, and then there was a young toddler's and younger children's house. So we were all separated the first few nights. And then I got to see my older brother in the daytime when we would, like, go to school or lunch or whatever. But the younger kids were taken care of separately. So my two youngest brothers were together with the younger kids.
When you look back on it, the police saved your life, didn't they? I mean, when you look, it's horrible. But if you look back on it, you're at least out of harm's way. Did you ever see it that way later on in life?
Well, yes, later on. This book is not only a story for people who have endured things, but it's also kind of a tribute to those who helped me and helped me become the woman I am today.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you some questions because I'm going to speed along just in case you want the tape, because I know it's like an hour, so I'm going to skip over a lot of things. What kind of student were you in school? My experience is when a girl like you, when I say a girl like you, meaning the experience that your environment that you were brought up in, you could either go two ways. One, very almost nun-like or very promiscuous. I don't think there's an in-between. What were you like when you're in, let's say, high school? 10th grade,
well,
Michelle.
That's book two.
We're ahead of ourselves.
I'm just going to tell you, I love school, and I did very well in school. I found it very easy. It was my escape from reality.
Right.
So I was very involved in school. I was very involved in choir, drama, flag, with softball, I mean, whatever I could join that I could afford, I did.
Good.
Volleyball, basketball, you name it. I did it just to stay at school.
Now, your home was still the group, is it fair to call it a group home? I mean, you're still in foster care. You're in foster care now, right?
We went from an orphanage, which is where they took us when they took us from the trailer park. We were in an orphanage.
Right.
And then eventually they found a foster home that would take all of us. And so there are two foster homes we lived in when we were younger. One was kind of an emergency foster home, and the second one was more permanent until we were rejoined with our biological father.
Great. Did you have any bad experience with? We've been hearing about the foster care system, and I'm hearing horrible stories. Have a horrible story? Good.
Not in these two.
Good.
No, these homes were wonderful, great people. Now, at first, because we were basically wild children. So if you take a pack of wolf cubs out of the wild, or kittens, if you find kittens in a barn, they're going to scratch and bite you because they don't know. They don't know discipline. They don't know structure. They don't know regimen or anything. That's the way we work. And I was probably the worst one of all of my siblings. I would scream at the foster mom. I would yell. I even went so far as to report her because I thought she was mean. But the thing is, we needed that structure. We needed that discipline. We needed people to show us how real families were supposed to act.
I'm going to add, we're almost done with your interview. I want to thank you for being so courageous and forthright. A lot of authors will come on and they'll write books about being a survivor, and I'll ask questions, and one or two, not many, but there's a few that, let's say, embellish their story. You're the real deal, Michelle. You're the real deal. Michelle, how are you? I know this, if I'm getting into book two area, just say that's book two. Because I do like to know, after you had that parental hell, how did you, in relationship with boyfriends, how did you relate to and trust another man since your father was like this and your mother was cuckoo, the one who flew over the trailer park? So how did you relate to a relationship, an innocent relationship, maybe high school, sweethearts?
I would say I had a hard time. I had a hard time until probably my sophomore year, maybe towards the end of my freshman year. I met a young man, and his family were really good people, and they kind of took me under their wing, and I called his mom, and they were kind of like foster parents to me. And so it was a really good experience.
Now, how old were you when you lost your virginity?
As far as penetration goes, I think
yes.
I was 13. Yeah.
And that adds up. And when you said penetration, so that's 13. So before that, let's say maybe 11, maybe you had a lot of it was fooling around and touching. What, consensual touching?
No.
Not consensual.
The molestation story was only one story of being forced to do something. There's another story later in the book. There were two stories. Another one where I was molested and I liked it. And then there was another one where I was physically held down by three boys and raped. Consensually, the first time I had sex was at 13.
Mm-hmm.
But
at 13.
Other than that, yeah.
But was it a boy that you liked? Was it one of these things?
Well, that's a story in the book, in book two, too.
Oh, that's
it's
going to be a great book.
It wasn't a boy that I knew. It wasn't a boy that it was a 17-year-old who was a football player, and I admired that he was a jock and he was popular, and he was supposed to give me a ride home, and it kind of happened. I didn't say no, but you know, and
I understand.
Girls that go through what I went through when I was a kid,
right?
They just tend to understand and think that if you just lay there and be quiet, it'll be over in a minute because it doesn't last long.
Wow.
And that's kind of the mentality that girls that are messed with, and maybe boys too, I don't know. That's kind of the mentality you adopt.
You do. You do. You just say it'll just be over soon. More I fight, it's longer.
Yeah.
And I understand the mentality. You mentioned another one that you were molested and you liked it. Tell me about that experience.
Well, when we went back to live with our mother after our mother and father had divorced. We lived above a bar, and she would leave us with our neighbor, who had trouble sleeping. I had nightmares. And we didn't have a TV. He had a TV. He had a color TV in his apartment. So me and my brothers would go over there and watch TV. And then when my brothers would fall asleep, he would fondle me. He never made me do anything with him. He would fondle me and tell me that would help me go to sleep.
Right.
So that I didn't feel as weird, but it did feel weird. So I was still very young.
Right. Well, you didn't know. So basically, he followed you to orgasm, and it relaxed you and go to sleep.
Right.
That's basically it. And I understand. You didn't feel threatened. It felt weird, but you didn't feel threatened that he was going to take your life. I understand completely.
Right.
You know what? You are a warrior, Michelle. You're a warrior. Look at you. And just telling the story and reliving the trauma, and you're coming through it, and you're holding up pretty good. I'm a wreck, but you're better than me. Now, what made you think to write a book about this, Michelle? Because when somebody writes a book about this, they're going to relive a lot of things that they forgot, or they're going to remember some things that they wish they never remembered before. This is a dangerous thing, especially without...
Right.
Before I say it, did you seek counseling at all, Michelle? Was anybody there to support you?
I'm just going to say that my co-author, Michelle Moon, has a degree in psychology.
Okay.
And to answer your story, how it came about, when I was in high school, I took an AP Lit course, and it was my favorite course, and our teacher would put a question on Monday. He would put a question on the board, and you had all week to answer that question. You had to write a paper, give it to him by Friday. And there was no right or wrong answer. You just, like, sometimes it would be Nietzsche. Sometimes it would be Shakespeare. You know, you could refer to the story he gave you to read for the week, or you could, you know, pull from other experiences as long as you, you know, were detailed. He didn't care. So some of his questions, I was able to use some of my life experiences and write this paper. And he pulled me after class one day, and he said, "Are these your stories?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "These happened to you?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Michelle, you have to write a book." He said, "These stories need to be heard. They can help so many people." And I said, "I'm 17. I'm like, one day, you know, I still have a lot of life left to live." And so then later, after my kids graduate high school, I went to college, which is something I wanted to do when I was younger, but I became pregnant and I had to quit college. So when my boys graduated college or high school, I went back to college, and in my psychology class, the dean of the college was my psychology professor. And again, we had to write papers about mental illness and stuff like that. I would draw from my experiences. And she pulled me after class one day, and she said, "Are these your stories?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Michelle, I want to write your book." She said, I feel like these stories need to be out there." And I was like, so I thought about it. And then finally she said, "We can just sit down. We'll meet for dinner. I'll tape record. We'll talk. I'll tape record it. I'll write." She said, "These stories need to be out there." And I said, "Okay, no problem." But then she's busy. She's the dean of a college, you know, and it just kind of fizzled. Well, one night I'm driving back from my family's, my mom's side, my mom's sisters, I still talk to them, that there was an issue going on in the family. And I was driving back, and I was really upset because I had kind of had an outburst, and they didn't understand my outburst. Because of molestation came back up in the family, and everybody's acting like it's no big deal. And I flipped out. I was like, "What the hell?" But I'm driving home, and I call my best friend, Michelle Moon, who is the author, co-author. She said, and she had just gotten laid off. We both worked for a telecommunications company, And she had worked for it for 18 and a half years, and she had just gotten laid off. So she was in the dumps. And she said, Michelle, you know, I know the dean said she wanted to do it, but ever since I've known you, I've always wanted to write your story. And now that I have time, can I please write your story? And if you don't like it, it's okay. I won't get mad. You can go with the dean. She said, I feel like I can do a good job. And I said, you know what? This is a great distraction for her, and it will be a good outlet. You know, we'll be able to hang out, drink wine, have some dinner, girls' nights, and then it'll probably fizzle. But it didn't. It ended up being she drew so much out of me. I would literally stand up in her living room and like act it out, do charades, like pull up pictures on the internet of what everything looks like and different situations.
Right.
And then as we're going along, a few chapters here and there, I'd give to the dean and have dinner with her, the one who originally wanted to write my book. And she would, you know, give me feedback on, you know, what she thought of that, or, hey, let's draw this out a little more and stuff like that. Actually, she is the one, Dr. Klein, who gave me the idea for the title of the book, Dumpster Doll, because there is a chapter in there about the doll. And she kept saying, oh, that's that dumpster doll, the one you found in the dumpster. That's such a good chapter. You need to expand on that. And I'm driving home that night, and that term just keeps ringing over in my head, dumpster doll. I was like, you know, that can have a double meaning, because I literally am a dumpster doll too, because I came from trash and now I'm, you know, doing so well. So I was like, you know what, that's going to be the title for the book. But my best
Very
friend
good.
Michelle and I, we would go through writing sessions until 5:30 in the morning before we even looked at a clock. And it turned into such a beautiful thing. She's such a beautiful writer. And she just made it so easy for me to talk about these things. I mean, not to say that we didn't go through a box of tissues on many of these stories. And she even had to crack a couple bottles of wine just to listen to it and breathe deeply, because she didn't grow up with any of this. And she just, sometimes I would tell her some of these and she would just sit there and get sick to her stomach and say, oh my gosh, I cannot believe this. And she had a hard time on some of the stories writing them, but she turned my atrocities and she made them so poetic and eloquent. And then when we finished, we went through the book, we rebuilt some of the stories. Also, I was giving it to my brothers as I was writing too, to make sure that I was remembering it properly. And there was one story in there. I remembered there were three boys, but I didn't remember who one of the boys was. My youngest brother told me, he said, yeah, I was standing in the doorway when I was raped. He said, I was standing in the doorway and that's who the other person was. And I was like, what? I don't remember that. He was like, yep, I remember it. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was like, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many times do you think that, I don't know your age right now. I don't know if you feel comfortable saying
I'm
your 46. Age.
I'm not afraid
okay.
to say that. I look great for my
well,
age.
You look great at any age. Michelle, how many times do you think you've been raped since 4 years old? And we're going to include the touching. Anything that is not consensual, and I don't care if it's not penetration, anything that's not consensual that's put upon anyone in a sexual way, I consider rape. So in your opinion, since 4 years old to who you are now, how many times do you think you've been raped?
Four times.
About four times. And
well,
if
four
you
people.
Were
there was a couple times
oh,
with my uncle, but four people.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, four people. But okay. Now you're 46. If you had to go back in time and you saw yourself as the 4 year old, it's you grown up now, but you're going to visit yourself at four, and you had to whisper one thing in that four-year-old's ear, what would you say?
Bite it off.
Okay. And you know, I'm going to give you another scenario, too. It's going to be a hard one. You seem well-adjusted. You got great friends. You seem like you have a nice family. Are you divorced or are you currently married now? You're not married
now? I am married. Okay. I'm married.
Oh, okay.
I have been married for our anniversary is next Friday, and it will be 18 years next Friday. We've been together 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, he is my second husband.
Well,
the
that's
first
okay.
one will be book three.
Well, that is great. So what, you know, so because I don't want to get too far out of the way because it's a book. And so, Michelle, yes. What do you want people to get out of this book? I know you wrote it to help people, and it's easy, you know, say I want to help people. But what do you really want them? Wait, before I ask that question, knowing that the husband you have now, knowing that the kids you have now and the friends you have now, I'm going to ask you another question. Do you believe in God at all?
I do. Yes.
Okay.
He has saved me so many times.
Right. Now, if you change one thing, Michelle, it could change your life now.
Right.
Meaning that
yes.
one thing that you change, you may not have the children. You may not have met your second husband. Knowing that if you had the choice, would you change anything at all, knowing how you are now?
No, because I love the way my life is. And it's a butterfly effect. If I changed one minute detail when I was younger,
right,
then I would possibly not have what I have now. And I'm very blessed.
Wow, you are. We're talking to Michelle Marie Mays. The name of the book is called Dumpster Doll. The book is on Amazon now. It's available now. Am I correct, Michelle?
It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and iBooks, and it's available in Columbus at a bookstore called The Book Loft.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle,
also,
I hope you go on. I'm sorry,
it'll
Ellen?
It'll be in our store, too, the store.
Hopefully. Hopefully.
No, it will be.
No pressure. No pressure.
No,
I love
she
Ellen.
Already said she
She's the best.
In the store.
Okay. Thank you, Ellen. Now, Michelle, I hope you start going on a book tour. And if anybody's going to go on a book tour, it should be you. I really hope you do.
I hope to. Yeah, I am having a book release party next Friday. I know you're in L.A., but if you come to Columbus, I'm going to have some media there, and I'm going to do a reading, and I'm going to set up all my DJ equipment, my karaoke equipment, and have some good old fashioned barbecue, and it's going to be a great celebration of you know these stories finally coming out.
Right, you are an inspiration, you really are. Again, the name of the book is called Dumpster Doll. The author, Michelle Marie Mays. We have a studio here, Michelle. What I'm going to do before, they might want to ask you questions, to give you 30 seconds to entice people to how to buy your book, where to buy your book, how to reach you, a shout-out to your friend, your publisher, your hero, and also if you want to cool me in there, you know, that's cool. But you don't have to.
Yeah.
But here you go, Michelle. 30 seconds is all yours, kid.
Hi, this is Michelle Mays, co-author of Dumpster Doll. You'll want to buy this book not only if you've gone through any tragedy, sexual abuse, physical abuse, domestic violence, abandonment, or if you're a foster child. You also want to buy it if you haven't gone through any of those situations to help open your eyes and open your hearts to show you what a difference you can make with those types of children that have gone through those things. I wrote this book with my best friend, Michelle Moon, who is a wonderful author. She brought so much poetry and eloquence to my horrific stories, and she just made everything so much easier. Also, I would like to give a shout out to my publisher, Columbus Publishing Labs. located in Zanesville, Ohio. And Emily Hitchcock is the CEO of the company, and she has been my point of contact through this entire process. I'd also like to give a shout out to Dr. Diana Klein, who is a lead instructor or lead speaker teacher at The Ohio State University. And she was very instrumental in helping me reignite the fire to get this story out there, and also is responsible for the name of the book. She gave me the idea for Dumpster Doll. Also, there have been many wonderful people since this book has come out that have helped me and helped me spread the word. Jacob Marquez of The Reading Corner started a very wonderful, friendly book club on Facebook, and he promotes, you know, positivity and uplifting messages to authors, and he likes to spotlight new authors, and he's actually mentioned my book in an article in an interview that he did with a New York Times bestselling author, Carolyn Levitt. So she featured Dumpster Doll in her blog last month, which was exciting, and he also did a live interview with me on Facebook last Thursday, which is on my Dumpster Doll page. If you want to like the Dumpster Doll page, you'll see these articles and interviews. And then also, I'm going to put this actual interview on the Dumpster Doll page with Brian Hammer and Ellen. Thank you guys so much. You have been wonderful, and you've asked some really, really hard questions, but you drew out of me what the reader needs to know. Because when they read this book, it's going to break their heart, but then mend it. And it will not only make you think, oh, what a great book. It will make you get up and do something about it. You'll want to help someone. And that's the feedback from the people that have read the book so far. That is the feedback I've been getting. You know, this book really is life-changing. It really is eye-opening. And I really hope you love it. And please like Dumpster Doll on Facebook. I'm also on Twitter, Dumpster_Doll, and Instagram, Dumpster_Doll. Thank you so much, Brian and Ellen. I really appreciate being on here today.
Well, thank you. And, you know, we don't do this very often. We only do it with special guests. Do you like wine? Do you like wine at all, Michelle?
I love Moscato and Riesling.
Well, we don't have that. We have our own special wine, and we break it open for special guests. We have a can of wine. Our wines are in cans. Ellen, what kind of can of wine? Oh, yeah. What kind of wine do we have that's available, Ellen?
Well, we have instead of Merlot, we have Merlin.
Oh, that Merlin. Merlin's great. Well, It's an acquired taste, Michelle. You know, we have low budget. What we do is we want our wine to be organic and fruitful. So what we do is we get people to go out in the middle of the street, and we see homeless people, and we take off their shoes, and we put a grape between their toes, and we squeeze our wine, our little grapes between their homeless people's toes. It has a really spicy taste, and it would be our honor to give you a cup of wine. Do you like ice cubes in your wine? You like it on the rocks?
Yes, I do.
Oh, well, here you go, Michelle. Wait a minute. Here's a little glass for you. There we go. Look at that.
Thank you.
It's fizzy.
Oh,
it's a fizzy.
It's got bubbles.
Oh, it's a bubbly. And a little can of wine for you, Ellen, because we're going to drink to Michelle May's success. There you go, Ellen. A little fizzy. Ah. And
wow,
me.
Wow, that's
fizzy. Wow, we got a live one this week. All right, here we go. A little can of wine for me. I'm a little parched. I need a little sippy. There you go. I want to give a toast to Michelle Marie Mays. Courage, survivor. She did not falter at all. She told the truth. She made us feel what she felt, and it's horrible. We don't get to talk to many people who I consider warriors. and heroes. And you're right, it's going to help so many people. I have been molested as a child myself. And I just want to say, Michelle, you're one of the best. Cheers, Michelle. Cheers.
Thank you, Brian.
You are so welcome. And any time that you want to come on a show, we talk about different subjects, and anytime you want to come on a show, this is your home. You got a VIP seat for you. Anything that you want to remember, you want to get off your chest, you want to promote, you now have an open door. We have a listenership of well over, I don't say it a lot, 30 million. We got probably more. We're on Stitcher. We're on TuneIn. We're on Blog Talk. We're on SoundCloud. We're everywhere. So you want to get your voice heard around the world? Guess what? They just heard you in Russia and Switzerland and Germany and France, and I can go on and on and on.
Wow.
And you're going to make a difference. You're going
to
make a big difference.
I want to.
And I got a little surprise.
I really do.
Thank you. Thank you. We have a surprise for you, Michelle.
You do?
Now that, yeah. Mystery caller, good morning.
Hey, how's everybody doing? This is Jacob Martinez. You did a great job with the interview, Brian, and you did a great job answering the questions, Michelle. I've been listening to the whole interview, the whole entire interview. You've done an excellent job.
Thank you,
Jacob.
That's so awesome.
Thank you. And Jacob, thank you for what you're doing.
I just wanted to say to people that they need to go pick up this book because it will really open their eyes and to let them know about what goes on in the foster care system. It was a very excellent book. I think it's a very important issue that gets glossed over a lot in our society.
Jacob, thank you so much. And again, what Michelle said, by you featuring artists and moving them forward, I want to thank you, Jacob, for the good work that you do.
You're welcome. You did an excellent job with the interview.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Thank you for coming in. We have a couple other people who might want to say, hang in there, Jacob. Jacob, you like wine? Here, I'm going to give you a can of wine, Jacob. You're a good guy.
Okay.
Here you go.
That sounds good.
Yeah,
a fancy
there
wine
you go.
Too, Jacob.
Yeah.
Very good.
Oh, dang.
That's one of our best wines, Jacob. We let it ferment for a little bit, and a week later, it is perfect. Mwah! For you, Jacob.
Thanks.
You're welcome, buddy. We also have, a morning crew who is very supportive, and they're sticking with us. They love the show. They're listening. We have a second show coming up with a celebrity chef that you would not believe. Celebrity chef Charisse Kerteri Cox. Every week she honors us with her recipes. She's here too. But here's a gentleman. His name is Peter Estrada. He's one of our morning crew. I'm going to ask Peter, do you have a question, Peter? Good morning, my friend.
Hello there, Mr. Jackson. How are you?
Hello
¿Cómo
there.
Estás bien?
I'm fine. I'm fine, Mr. Peter.
I have to say first, Brian, you are one of the best interviewers I've ever heard. I mean, you know how to make people comfortable. You ask the really, really hot button questions that people
mm-hmm.
don't tend to want to answer, but you develop this trust. I've always felt interested in things like this because people who've had so-called normal lives with no type of conflict or strife tend to be kind of boring. But people who are survivors, like Michelle, and in some ways I was too, as you know, and you are,
mm-hmm.
it's always
mm-hmm.
interesting that survivors get involved with the arts. They're either into music or writing or acting or whatever. It's almost as if the arts kind of cleanse you. They give you a cathartic effect that you can express
mm-hmm.
yourself easier. It puts you on the public stage in a entertainment/psychology way. So I wanted to really give kudos to Michelle because she found a way. She found a way to heal herself through her writing, through theater. Like she said, she did drama. through sports. Mm-hmm.
And a
I
DJ. Don't forget her DJ name.
And she's karaoke. Yeah, baby.
Yeah, baby.
So
yeah.
God bless you, Michelle. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you, Peter. And we have another one really quickly. Arkansas Mike. We consider Arkansas Mike one of our crew and a friend. Arkansas Mike, good morning. Do you have a question for
cool.
Michelle? Marie Mason. Thank you,
yep.
Peter.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I don't have a question for Michelle, but I do have a comment that my personal viewpoint is that any person that offers their own personal testimonies,
mm-hmm.
we should always be appreciative of, and we should always
mm-hmm.
recognize that those personal testaments and personal testimonies are remarkable and valuable. And those
Ooh.
Of us that don't learn the lessons from them are, you know, we're against our own better goodness if we don't learn those lessons. And if we don't give the true thanks and recognize those gifts that, you know, such as Michelle writes in her book. So
mm-hmm.
thank you for your gift, Michelle, and thank you for your personal testimony.
Oh, thank you. Also, I forgot to mention my brother, Eric Isaacs, drew the cover. I told him my vision in my head, and he sketched it out in like 5 minutes. He said, I see what you're seeing. I see those same things. So he drew the cover. He is the artist. He will be the artist for book 2 and book 3 as well.
Wow.
Well, I want to tell him I see the cover, and he did a great job. I was going to mention the cover. The cover is so important in the book, and he did a great job,
mm-hmm.
Michelle. He really did. Shout out to him. I'll give him some wine, but I'll drink his since he's not here. let's see. And, of course, our celebrity chef. Her segment is next, but she came in because she wanted to hear the story. The beautiful celebrity chef, Charisse Kateri Cox. Do you have a question for Michelle before she leaves? Charisse?
I don't really have a question. I just want to tell you thank you. You know, a lot of people go through this. I'm not familiar with the system, but I am familiar with some of the experiences that you've gone through. And, you know, I thank you. Thank you very much for telling your story. Because people really need to understand that this happens every day to kids, and it's not supposed to. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charisse. Yeah. I hope your foundation gets up and going quick. They need you. Millions of children need you. And keep up the good work, and give your best friend who helped you, and your author, your publisher, and you guys are doing good work. And you know what? I asked you before, Michelle, do you believe in God? It's weird how the Lord works, because what you went through, it's going to help so many other people. So you're one of the angels, Michelle, because with this book, it's going to help so many people.
He is paving the way. He's giving me so many signs to tell me this is exactly what I'm supposed to do with this life.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many great things that are happening. Every day, something new happens and opens up. And it's like I've been laying these dominoes my whole life, and now they're finally lined up and just... It's like it was just supposed to happen. This is supposed to be happening.
Well, you keep doing the
work. Hey,
Michelle.
Brian, can I share something?
And we'll keep watching.
Melissa?
Melissa's not here, though, but this is, we do have another show,
sorry.
Peter.
I'm sorry.
And
I got the wrong
We do have another show.
I used the wrong name. So this wonderful lady, I wanted to share something with her.
Michelle.
Michelle.
Marie Mace.
Marie Mace, I had the honor of meeting Dr. Wayne Dyer one time, and I asked him the same question you answered. Would you change anything in your past? And he said, to become the person I am today, like you are, I had to be an alcoholic. I had to come from a broken family, this and that, blah, blah, blah. Every single thing that we go through makes us come through as heroes and warriors like you have. So that was a wonderful answer you gave about, no, I wouldn't change a thing because it all ended up, I look who I am now. God bless you.
Thank you.
There you go. All right. Well, Jacob is here to drive Michelle Mays home.
Yeah,
Michelle,
yes, I am.
Marie Mays home. He's here.
Yes, I am.
So I want to thank you so much, Michelle. Marie Mays, the book is called Dumpster Doll.
Dumpster
get it
doll.
Everywhere, and I think you should get it. And you know what? This is the kind of book I really think parents should read to their children. And when I say children, I'm saying maybe age 12 and up. What do you think, Michelle?
Teenage years and up is fine, but not younger than that. Scare anyone at a young age. Because it's
true.
Pretty raw. It's pretty raw. I've been told it punches you in the gut. So.
Yeah. Okay. But I do think this is a talking thing, and you should try to get into some schools and colleges and things like that. I hope you do the tour, help so many people. Michelle, Marie Mays, everybody, thank you so much for coming, and thank you, Jacob. And we will be watching you, Michelle. We'll be watching the work that you do. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian and Ellen. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. There you go. There she goes. Michelle.
Hi, everybody.
Marie Mays.
Bye.
They love you. They love you. Michelle, Marie Mays, and Jacob, thank you so much for coming in. And thank you guys for coming in. In 3 minutes, our show will end. We have a doubleheader. I cannot tell you enough about Charisse. I cannot tell you enough about the celebrity chef Charisse. And she's making
Ellen. She's wonderful.
She is wonderful. Ellen, what's the dish? Are we doing meatloaf? Are we doing meatloaf?
Yes, we are. Yep, we're doing
meatloaf. Yeah, that's right. And she makes meatloaf look good. Arkansas Mike, Peter, and Charisse, thank you so much for coming in and the support for the interview. Thank you for the kind words to our guest, Marie Mays, Michelle Marie Mays.
What a nice lady.
Yeah. There are some survivors in this world. There's 325 million people, I guess, and everybody has a story, but you only hear maybe 5%, and those are the people who are like Mario Puzo and so on, but you're missing the other stuff. And
Mario
we bring
Puzo.
You.
Wow, what a name. What a name to pull out of that.
Well, a lot of people are just going for name authors, but there's so many stories out there, and they're missing great stories from indie authors. So take a time to check out some of the best stories around.
Hello,
all right, guys, we got
how are you?
I'm fine.
I know
you?
You are. This is Peter.
I know Peter.
I like how he goes into his British accent. This is Peter.
Hello, love. How are you? I just wanted to throw in, Brian, that I had a wonderful opening night. I'm now an official singer for.
I'm sorry I couldn't be there,
band.
Peter. You invited me. Don't. I'm really sorry I couldn't be there. I'm sure it was a great night for you, and you know I was
there.
There
were people from Hollywood. There were people from Hollywood there that I knew. There were people I went to school with, people that were my counselors, former students of mine went.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you saw the videos. They were kind of cool. It was like a domino, like Michelle said, one domino, and it hopes. It'll lead to your stuff that we'll be working on, and life is a gift now for me. So
I'm happy for you, my friend, and it's
Brian,
just gonna get
I
better.
Hate,
I've been.
I hate this conversation.
Yeah,
short,
I see it.
But we have. Yeah, we're gonna get cut
seconds.
Off.
Okay, that's part one of our show, and thank you so much, Peter. And we're going to talk soon. We're going to talk more about it. Our next show is coming up in 10 seconds with the celebrity chef, Charisse Kateri Cox, everyone. I hope you're hungry because Charisse Kateri Cox, she's going to feed us, and we're going to eat like kings. All right, we'll see you guys in 5 minutes. Thank you for coming in, and that's the end of our header. Again, the author, Michelle Marie Mays, the book, Dumpster Doll. Get it. All right, guys, we'll see you in about 2 minutes. Thank you for coming in, everybody, and have a great weekend.